Hello and welcome to Overtime Hockey Talk. My name is Mark Paul, my co-host Justin Baker, right there. How's it going, Justin? This is our first time using Squadcast, so we've officially graduated from the stereotypical Google Meet, which there's nothing wrong with Google Meet. Yes, here we are. We've graduated to the podcaster, videocaster software.
This is like moving from JV to varsity.
Yeah, we're like definitely super seniors taking us this long. 4 years now, we're seven. Yes, hopefully this is looking better for all of our listeners, our viewers, and we are excited to just talk about hockey today. We're going to once again perform all the funerals. We gotta knock these out before we gotta do playoff stuff anyways. We're going to talk about the Minnesota Wild, the Buffalo Sabres, and the New Jersey Devils as their seasons are, and not that they're coming to a close any sooner than other teams in the National Hockey League, but let's face it, they're dead in the water. They're just playing these games for themselves and maybe for some pride. So, Justin, where do you want to start?
Let's see, we got two teams in the East, one in the West. I say we start out East, and let's start off with a bang with the New Jersey Devils. I think out of all the teams here, they were the one team I think almost everybody penciled in to make the playoffs this year.
The absolute, maybe, you know, I think our last show we talked about somebody having like super high expectations coming in and it being really disappointing. Maybe that was Pittsburgh that we talked about, but I don't know if there really is anyone more disappointing than the New Jersey Devils. Not only, I don't think this was like, hey, we're not gonna make the playoffs, maybe like a bubble team. This was like, this team maybe could win this division. And yeah, right now, they're second to last in the division. The only team that they are topping is the Columbus Blue Jackets, which isn't saying a whole lot. Basically, the team that had to fire their coach 5 days before the season is the one team that they managed to trump. And I keep going back. There was this interview with, I believe it was Jack Hughes. I want to say he was on 32 Thoughts. And he said something about it's exciting to come into a year where everybody's going to be chasing us and they know that we're good. And we're not just this team that's hoping to make the playoffs. That we've already won a round and blah, blah, blah. And then all this happened. So I just keep going back and thinking, like, these guys went into this season thinking that they were really good. And they just have not been good. And I know there's lots of reasons. Let's talk about them. What's your number one reason that the Devils missed the playoffs this year?
I mean, I think it's everybody's, and it's goaltending, right? Let's just face it. I think you and I, I think in general, most people probably thought the goaltending was going to be good enough, right? Given the talent they had up front. I mean, you look at this loaded roster they had with Jack Hughes, Nico Hischier down the middle. On the wing, we had Timo Meier, Jesper Bratt, Tyler Toffoli to start the season. They had a lot of freaking talent up front, and then they were going to get an infusion of youth on the back end. I mean, yes, they lost some key pieces on the back end. We knew that was happening in the offseason. But bringing in Luke Hughes, and you would think that would be enough, right? Just enough to get it filled in. But unfortunately, they had injuries on the back end with Dougie Hamilton and injuries up front as well. But goaltending didn't do them any favors is essentially what I'm getting at. You look at the numbers. No, go ahead.
Nope, you go.
I mean, the bottom line is you look at these numbers. For most of the season, they've been relying on Vanacek, Nico Daws, Akira Smith, and not a single one of them even touched a .900 save percentage, which to me is a must-have for any team looking to make the playoffs. You got to have one goaltender in your roster that's putting up decent numbers, right?
You got to have one above .900.
Yeah.
Simple as that. I mean, when's the last time a team made the playoffs with two goalies? Or we'll say a team save percentage under .900.
Yeah,
it's probably got to be since like the 80s.
Yeah,
when everybody. When you've got Hall of Fame players who have an 887 save percentage. What's Grant Fuhr's save percentage?
Oh my gosh, I think his was like an 890.
Call that up. Yeah, that up. Yeah, it's terrible. It was when they first save percentage. I can't remember how far back they have save percentage for statistics, but I don't think it's any further back than maybe the 70s. Yeah, it's...
By the way, 887 for his career save percentage.
887! My joke number. There you go, 887. I think the other issue, and this may have affected goaltending more than people think, is that, you know, this really, this defense, when you take a look at it, yeah, there's some potential. There certainly is some great potential, like Luke Hughes and Simon Nemec. Tons of potential there. Jonas Siegenthaler had a great year last year. And coming in here, there was high expectations. I had 21 points in the 80 games, and he just got hurt. And that never goes well. And you get rid of other guys, Severson, and it's just been a mess on the back end. And I don't know why they thought that they could just go and say, hey, Luke Hughes, you can just take over for these veteran guys who had really nice seasons for them. I don't understand how you look at that decor and go, yes, this is a playoff team. Unless Luke Hughes and Simon Nemec were both going to be candidates for the Calder.
I think early on, everybody had Luke Hughes as a candidate, and rightfully so. Sure. The way you look, he finished last year.
Yes, but that's also, yeah, you can hope that a guy's going to be a Calder candidate, but there are very few players at the very beginning of a year where you go, this guy's going to be the Calder candidate, and he is. Yeah, you've got, sure, Connor McDavid, he was in that conversation. Austin Matthews, or a Connor Bedard, but even still, you look at Connor Bedard, and there's no guarantee that he's going to win it because of the time that he missed. I still think he wins it, but it's going to be a close contest. And when you consider how difficult it is to have a really great rookie season from the back end, I don't know. I think it was just asking too much over 82 games. Did he have a nice little playoff there? Sure. But the playoffs are just, you're just, hey, we got to throw you in here. Let's just see what you can do. And you're just playing. But yeah, an 82-game season, you're not just playing.
That's the thing, right? Yeah, from a forward perspective, guys like Austin Matthews, Connor Bedard, you don't have to come in and be the savior up front and be, like, both responsibly defensively and put up the points, right? You're just expected to come in, put the puck in the back of the net, and the defense will work itself out over the next 4 or 5 years, right? That's usually the expectation with guys like that. Same with Connor McDavid, same expectation, right? He'll get the faceoffs, he'll get the defensive side of his game together eventually, but he can put up 100 points, so we don't really have to worry about it. Whereas guys on the back end like Luke Hughes, you have to be responsibly defensively or else it's going to burn you. And it's very clear, even at 18 minutes a game, I mean, it's just, he's missing that part of his game right now.
I'm guessing that had their head coach been anyone but someone like Lindy Ruff, Lindy Ruff's got, I mean, he's won a Stanley Cup. He's been to Stanley Cup finals. He's been around forever. He's a highly respected guy. And I think because it was Lindy Ruff, they went, let's see if he can right this ship. I think it had been a lesser coach, somebody that maybe this is just his first or second job, I think he probably would have been fired in December.
Well, how about this? They had Andrew Burnett, right, as an assistant the year before. Look what he's doing in Nashville. Imagine what he could have been doing, I mean, with more talented offensive players right now.
It's almost like last year was a little bit of a blip. Like, they got a little more fortunate, and things went really well for them. They stayed very healthy. I mean, let's face it. Dougie Hamilton being out is probably the biggest factor as to why this team missed the playoffs. They had Dougie Hamilton, Jack Hughes, and Nico Hischier all out at the same time at one point. Let's go down the list. That's top two forwards, top two centers, and your top defenseman. Let's talk about what that would mean for, that's Austin Matthews, John Tavares, and Morgan Riley are all out at the same time. Granted, Tavares, Marner, and Riley were all out at the same time, and they still won. but for a whole season, for a good chunk of time, yeah. And due to injuries, and I think that was a lot of sickness in that one. But I mean, who else? Like Barkov, and imagine like a Barkov and Reinhardt are both out, along with Aaron Ekblad. Aaron Ekblad's always out. They're used to it.
I mean, what about Crosby, Malkin, and Letang being gone? See ya. Yeah. Pittsburgh's dead.
Crosby. That's all.
Yeah.
If Crosby's out, they're out. Speaking of which, what an insane accomplishment to now have been a point per game player for 19 straight years. Unbelievable. Only guy to do it aside from Wayne Gretzky.
Dude, tip of the cap to that man right there.
19. And you know what probably made me more uncomfortable than anything is the fact that he's been playing in the NHL for 19 years.
Dude, I can still remember us playing tennis, on a tennis court, right, and floating, and you showing up in that Crosby jersey, And dude, I
have a nice Team Canada Crosby jersey. I believe that was a 2010. I think that was the 2010 Olympic team.
Okay. Wow.
I will sport that jersey next show. It'll be on.
Dude.
It'll be on. We'll take a flyer from the hockey guy. If you've ever watched the hockey guy, he's
a love
YouTuber.
Him. Yeah. He's got 800 jerseys.
I was talking to these guys. Yes, he has a million jerseys. And his jersey collection is absolutely epic. I have a collection of jerseys that are like Salvation Army collection of jerseys. And like Chinese knockoff jerseys where I was probably like 2008, somewhere in there. I was like, no way, you could get these jerseys for $20. And hey, some of them are actually pretty cool. I have a Mario Lemieux, the like original Penguin, not the original Penguins logo, not the blue and white, but the 89 one, the cartoonish looking penguin.
Oh yeah.
We'll pull it up. We'll pop it on the screen. That I have that jersey. The one that's a really weird yellow. I'll see if I can find it and drop it in here. But yeah, I'll wear that one too. We'll just start a parade of jerseys and we'll try to compete with the hockey guy. And then we'll run out after 12 shows.
Yeah.
We'll have to start recirculating. All right, anything else for the New Jersey Devils? You think this is a team that next year they just make the playoffs with a similar group, or are they going to make some big changes?
I think the
obviously
only big...
they already find their coach.
Yeah, I think the only big change we're going to see for New Jersey is they're going to pursue a guy like Jacob Markstrom, right? I think they're going to go after a goaltender hard. We've got Kaapo
Kähkönen.
Even though
they got Jake Allen.
So they got Jake Allen. Kaapo Kähkönen's on an expiring deal, so he'll probably... I could see him potentially resigning, but I think other teams are going to give him more money than he would get in New Jersey. And I think New Jersey would rather go after a guy like Markstrom and get his $6 million on the book and maybe find a way to move Timo Meier, because he's just not pulling his weight, in my opinion. But
he's been playing a lot better with Travis Green.
And yeah, I'll give you that.
That at least has been a silver lining. That's what you're hoping, right? You bring in Travis Green and you hope that the guys that are struggling find their way. I would say also for Timo Meier, some of the issue has been the fact that there's been so many guys in and out of the lineup. I mean, he's supposed to be playing with Jack Hughes or Nico Hischier all year, and they're just getting moved around. And, I mean, hey, a good player should be able to play with anyone. But, shoot, even a guy like Crosby, a guy like McDavid, they can't just play with anyone either. I think you've signed him to a long deal. He's not going anywhere.
No, of course not.
You're not going to trade him at his low value. Also, I think a lot of teams out there would go, sure, I mean, we'll take him. I mean, he's still a good player. You know he is. You know there's something in there. Although, it seems as though there's been a lot of good players who have signed long deals that just fall apart, i.e. Huberto, i.e. Meyer. And it's an uncomfortable, a Goudreau. Like, when that happens, it's got to make you go, I mean, I kind of... As much as you're like, oh, shoot, and Austin Matthews only wants to sign these five-year deals, I some of these teams, I feel like you got to go, maybe it's better that we sign some guys to five-year deals, because these eight-year deals, if they don't work out, they just wreck you for a long time.
Yeah, look at Pierre-Luc Dubois in L.A., man. They tried to trade him because they instantly regretted that deal.
Oof. Yep. And here's what I don't understand. I think we've said this before on the show, but I don't know Pierre-Luc Dubois, but I can tell you what I've gathered from the fact that I've watched him play. I've seen what he's said in the media. I mean, he's a cancer to whatever room he's in. He just is. And it might just take several years. You would think that a room like that with Philip Deneau, with Anze Kopitar, with Drew Doughty, you'd think that room would be able to get that guy under control. Get him to buy in. He won't buy. He doesn't buy in anywhere he goes.
No.
It honestly a little bit reminds me of Evander Kane in some ways, but I think Evander Kane was more of an issue off the ice that caused issues in the locker room. Whereas Pierre-Luc Dubois, I don't know how else to say it. Sure seems like he's a dick. And just because you think you're great, I mean, that's fine. There's plenty of players in the NHL that know they're great. That doesn't bother me, but he's not that great. He's been a good player at times in his career. He's shown a lot of promise. But I can't see why you would have ever traded for him in the first place. And that's how I've always felt about him. When he was in, what, he was in Winnipeg, before that in Columbus, I always felt, man, just something off about this guy. You get those vibes about people. Kind of. Now, it doesn't mean that he can't grow up. Well, he can grow up, and hopefully he does. I mean, he signed a long-term deal, so he's going to be in L.A., but that's unfortunate. That's what it's come down to, but I don't even know him, and I can gather that. I just can't believe that no one else was able to figure that out before they traded the farm for him.
Sometimes, man, you just want talent, or you want a certain player, and you're paying up and regretting. That's it. Yep. I mean.
Big regrets.
No regrets.
All right, let's move on from the New Jersey Devils, and we'll swing out west. We'll go to the Minnesota Wild. I think we had this team right on the bubble when we did our preseason rankings. I don't remember if I had them in the playoffs or not. I didn't look. But I know I would have had them on the bubble based on what the team is here. And I think if I remember, you had them out.
Yeah, I did. And I mean, mostly because we knew Dallas and Colorado were going to be there. I think we both put them in there. And it was really between St. Louis, Minnesota, and Nashville at that point. And I think you and I both were leaning towards St. Louis. Nashville was a mystery, I think, going into this season. I don't think anybody expected anything big from them. But I think all three of these teams, really, you and I had them on the bubble, really just sitting there 7-8, that third spot. But, you know, same with – I think you definitely had Winnipeg in the playoffs, where I don't think I did. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, and their season has largely been, they've been playing from behind from the very beginning. And a lot of that started because Kirill Kaprizov had a really slow start. He did not look good. I mean, he's gone on fire. I mean, he's got 83 points in 67 games. He's been fine. He's been himself, ends up being basically on pace the same that he was. Actually, last year he had 75 points in 67 games. So he's even better. But he had a slow start, which hurt Minnesota. And everything snowballed from there. I mean, they weren't getting the goaltending in the beginning. Philip Gustafson wasn't that great. Jared Spurgeon gets hurt. It just didn't look like they ever had it all together. And I think ultimately the reason why is that you can't go this long. We're talking, when's the last time this team had even a guy who you would consider a really high-end number two center? They have some, I would say, what are, like a Ryan Hartman to me is like a 2A, 2B type of guy. Like, yeah, okay, if he's going to be your top center, then you better, like, Joel Eriksson-Ek is, he's playing really well, 30 goals, 61 points. He's having a career year right now. I just don't know that he's the guy that, if your team's going to be a playoff team, that he's going to be your number one center. Like Joel Eriksson-Ek, Ryan Hartman. I think that's probably the issue right there. Yeah, he's putting up 60 points. That's also, he's getting lots of ice time. He's playing with Kaprizov. Like, you got to think that a guy you're slotting in there is going to put up some numbers. But as far as carrying a team, none of their centers can do it carrying a line. And I think ultimately that's where it comes back to, is they've been searching for that center and they cannot seem to find anyone that really moves the needle for them. So then they're playing this really defensive, sit back and try and pounce game and let Kaprizov do his thing and hope that's enough. And it just says not. I mean, now, granted, hey, I guess the silver lining in this season is Brock Faber, right? Nobody's going to complain about the kind of season that Faber's had.
Nope. I mean, look, he's probably going to finish number two in the rookie voting. I mean, it's a shame. I probably would put him number one considering the position he's in and what he's been able to do playing 25 minutes a night with that Wild team. But, yeah, I go back to your point about Joel Eriksson-Ek. I do not think he is – he's not a number one center. He's a number two, maybe even on a bad day, a number three. But, again, regardless if you put him at two or three, he's not a number one. And – let's face it, he's getting those points because he's playing with Kirill the Thrill. Boldy's been great. Zuccarello has been fine. But outside of that, they really lack that number
Rossi's
one center.
Yeah. 20 goals from your rookie center. You're not mad about that. And I think that Marco Rossi can develop into that top center. But again, like, we're still waiting here for a true top center. And maybe right. Rossi does end up being that guy, but he's not this year. He's still a middle six, maybe second, third line type of player. And I think this is what you expect. It's not even a knock. It's just they bought out their two huge contracts in Parise and Suter. And this is has to be what you expected, that you're not going to be anywhere close to the top, and you're probably going to miss the playoffs unless everything goes right. Absolutely everything has to go right. And it definitely has not this season. It could next year. These younger guys, Faber and Rossi, they're all a year older. But it's they're still not going to be able to go out and do a whole lot. I mean, they've $9 million in cap space, and you've got to sign a couple. Like you have to be thinking in the back of your head, all right, we are going to have to sign Rossi in 2 years. We are going to have to sign Faber in 2 years. So yes, do they have a whole bunch of cap space this year? Sure, but you have to be thinking that you have to re-sign both of those guys, and those are probably going to be huge numbers. Faber's probably going to get maybe in the neighborhood of $9 million when his contract comes up.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see how that one plays out. I think a good measuring stick is going to be Mo Sider's contract, right? How does that play out? Because he's been hovering around that 40-point, 50-point mark these last couple seasons and was the Calder winner. So you've got a guy who essentially is, in my opinion, the Calder winner in Brock Faber. If he continues to play like this, yeah, I could see a short-term, 3-year, $6 million deal. But maybe they go long-term and they give him 8 times 9 and lock him up in a couple seasons. But yeah, to your point, maybe you've got some money to play with next season to try to find a center. But with Jared Spurgeon being gone all year, and then Ryan Hartman being up and down, I think ideally in an ideal world, you want Joel Eriksson Ek as your number two, Ryan Hartman as your number three center, and then you want somebody else in that number one spot. Now, I agree with you. I think Marco Rossi might get there eventually, but he's still 3-4 years away from that, in my opinion. And yeah, they need something now, and it sucks because you've got Kirill the Thrill coming up on free agency in 2 summers. And well, but if he's eligible to be re-signed in 2 summers, and yeah, if he doesn't... Yeah, you would absolutely have to trade him. And then at that point, it's okay, let's restart this whole thing.
Yep, and that's the tough part about where they are, is that they did what they did and continue to try to win, and they're just stuck in the middle. And let's be honest, the Minnesota Wild have been stuck in the middle for about 20 years. They made it to the conference finals one time, and I believe it was in 2003. Right?
Yeah, I think you're right.
Because they played the Ducks in the conference finals. And I think that was like one of the lowest scoring conference finals of all time. We can pull that up. But yeah, Minnesota Wild, I think they definitely have some nice pieces. They've got all their picks outside of a third round pick and a seventh round pick this year. So they'll be taking their first round pick. And hey, there's, in some respects, there's always the lottery. Like they are definitely down. They're down there. I mean, they're 18th. I guess they're not so far down that they're going to end up likely with a really good pick. But hey, you win a lottery, you push yourself into the top 10, you make a good pick. What's funny, in the Eastern Conference, had Minnesota been over there, they would be in a playoff spot right now. If that tells you anything different about the East and the West. I think what it says is that the bottom of the West is so bad. Like these teams are just scooping up points. Yep. And the bottom of the Eastern Conference is not nearly what the bottom of the West is. The bottom of the East is Columbus and Montreal. And then Ottawa, New Jersey are the next two bottom teams.
Take all those teams over Arizona, Calgary, Seattle right now, maybe.
Yeah. So. The two bottom teams in the West and the two bottom in each division in the West and the two bottom teams in each of the division in the East. I mean, they just don't even stack up. I mean, Columbus has 62 points. San Jose has 42. Those are the two worst teams. Anyways, a big disparity between the top and the bottom there in the West compared to the East. All right, let's scoot over back to the Eastern Conference. One more team, the Buffalo Sabres. How do you feel about this season for the Sabres?
I think disappointment is a good way to put it. I mean, for me, anyways, after what they did last year, and, you know, you had Devon Levi coming in, you figured the goaltending was going to improve, right?
Probably should have made the playoffs last year, honestly.
Yeah, they probably should have.
And had it not been for some unlucky things.
Yeah. But I mean, if you really look at, you know, Detroit, Ottawa, Buffalo, these have been the three teams we've been looking at the last few seasons as teams that have been out of the playoffs a while and are in rebuilding, regrowing. And to me, I honestly, out of the three of them, I figured Buffalo would be the one that would probably make the playoffs. And in my opinion, they're probably playing worse than any of all the three, in my opinion. Now, lately, they've been playing better. They've looked better. But again, I don't think anytime no knock on Rasmus Dahlin, but if he's your leading point guy on your team, it's not going well. I mean, he's no Kale McCarr as far as production is concerned.
And that is definitely due to some injuries. Casey Mittelstadt obviously isn't there anymore. There's been a lot going on with the Sabres. But it's like that every year. There's always a lot going on and always these reasons why. Granted, hey, Tage Thompson, he only played in 65 games so far out of the, 76? So he missed 11 games. But those 11 games, it's not like they would have won all of them by any means. So I don't think that those 11 games made or broke the Buffalo Sabres. I think this is still a team that's growing. Pretty crazy about Jeff Skinner, right? He got to 1,000 games. He's the only NHL player to ever play 1,000 games and never play a playoff game. Poor freaking guy. Never made it to the playoffs. And his rookie season was with the Carolina, right? Like he played for the Carolina Hurricanes back when he joined the NHL. And there's something that season for the Hurricanes, I believe it was that year. Like he had a fantastic rookie year, 63 points, 31 goals, wins the Calder. And I want to say that year, I got to look up what happened to the Carolina Hurricanes, but I want to say that they barely missed the playoffs.
Oh.
Let's see if I'm right. We'll see if my memory serves me correctly. Eastern Conference, Carolina Hurricanes. Of course, these are silly standings. They had these stupid standings. I hate you, Google. I hate you. Google's standings. I don't know. Don't ask me why I'm looking at Google standings.
Oh, I hate the NHL.
They don't even. Oh, wow. Why is the old. Oh, yeah, this is weird. I guess Carolina missed the playoffs by two points.
2 points.
So they were 91 points, and the Rangers made the playoffs with 93. I believe. Was that the year? No, that wasn't the year that it was Philadelphia and New York. Remember that? Philadelphia beat New York in a shootout or something like that at the last game of the season. And
oh, God, yes. I remember that.
But anyways, the Buffalo Sabres, they really are in this spot. They haven't had good goaltending. They had a lot of injuries. It's like very similar to the Devils. They have talent up front. They have talent on the back end. But it just isn't all coming together quite yet to where this is a playoff team, especially considering the other high-end talent that's in this division. And frankly, the Red Wings built their team a little differently where they have the veterans in place who are the top players on their team, like a Larkin, like they bring in Patrick Kane, and that worked out amazingly for the Red Wings. I know there was some talk about Patrick Kane going to Buffalo. And I wonder if he had gone to Buffalo, is Buffalo in the playoffs?
I mean, that is his hometown, right? So that would have been nice for them. But I'll tell you what, the one nice thing that Patty Kane has done, I mean, he's been able to hook up with Alex DeBrincat. He doesn't have that instant chemistry with anybody else. Would he mesh well with a guy like Jeff Skinner or Alex Tuch? Maybe. But those things take time to develop, right?
Tage Thompson.
Yeah. And that's the other thing too, right? Tage Thompson, you're not having him most of the season, whereas JT Compher and Dylan Larkin have pretty much been there all year. Larkin's missed a few games here or there, but for the most part, he's been in the lineup full time. And Dylan Cousins.
Tage Thompson went from almost 47 and 47 last year, 94 points. And even in 65 games, he only has 27 goals. I mean, he's scoring at a far less rate. I mean, he almost has, it's almost half the amount of points in just 13 more games. Like, the point per game isn't looking, it really matches up more with his year before when he was at 38 and 30, 68 points in 78 games. This year, 52 points in 65 games. The year before, 94 and 78. So when you consider that, you almost go, as Now, he signed a nice deal. He's only getting $7.1 million for the next 7 years again. He's not a UFA until 2030. So, hey, $7.1 million, you will happily take a guy who's putting up what would be, if he played a full 82-game season, somewhere between 65 and 70 points. I mean, that's more than fine for a guy making $7.1 million. But now, do you want to see him play better? Sure. Did injuries play a factor in maybe why he hasn't been put up as many points? Sure. Did the team around him make a difference? Sure. But it seems as though, what are the Sabres going to do? You can't fire your coach again. I don't think you want that.
Well, they just gave him a contract extension for two more years. Right. So
you know they're not going to do that. And they bring in Bo and Byram. And I think next year you're going to have to really take a good hard look in the mirror and figure out how you're going to take what their strength is, which should be their back end, between Byram, Dahling, and Power. You got to figure out a way to put the puck in these guys' hands more and allow them to create from the back end, because I think that's the only way you're going to win.
Yeah, I agree. And here's the other thing too, right? So they've clearly, I think they have the mindset now that they're going to start shifting the way they play. Now, whether or not that is Granato long-term or somebody else stepping in to make those changes, we will see. But you make the move, you trade Casey Mittelstadt, and you bring in Bowen Byram, right? So now you're putting the emphasis on defense a little bit more. You've got Devin Levi coming up. UPL has looked pretty good the second half of the season. He's looked much, much better anyways, in my opinion. And you've also gotten rid of Kyle Okposo, your captain, right? So there's a change in guard, change in leadership almost a little bit with this team. Shifting that focus, I think, towards the back end would be the best move this team could make. Even if you want to take the mindset and play like, oh, I don't know, play like LA or Carolina, where you're a little bit more defensive minded and not really focusing on those, let's try to get Tage Thompson 100 points every year, right? Let's not focus on getting him 40 goals and 100 points.
Who cares?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I want to see the Sabres in the playoffs. Honestly, like, it's been so long. What has it been, 15 years or something like that? 15 or 16 years?
I think,
that's just,
I think
too,
it's been
long.
11, but regardless, it's been too long.
Let's look it up. Call it up.
Yep, I'm pulling it up right now. Let's see.
Faster taker than I am. Yes. Either way, that's way too long.
Gosh. Oh, come on. 2001. I think. No, wait. No. That was not. No. Sorry. I'm reading this. This is the wrong site.
I have a lot of memories of Chris Drury.
Oh, gosh, yes.
The Buffalo Sabres.
They haven't made the playoffs since 2011.
Okay. So it's been 13 years. 13 years. That's painful. If you are a Buffalo Sabres fan, that is just painful. I mean, it's akin to, I would say, very similar to the Florida Panthers, who really, it was what, 1996 was the last time they had won a playoff series before, like, 2 years ago?
Before last? Yeah, 2 years ago.
2 years ago. And that's a freaking long time to not win a playoff series. And they also didn't really make the playoffs very much in that stretch, especially after, in this century, they hadn't made the playoffs that much, so that's a tough pill to swallow. But, man, 13 years in Buffalo, a place where hockey is number two, like just past the Bills. That's a really tough pill to swallow. I hope that the Buffalo Sabres can figure it out next year and make the playoffs, as long as it's not at the expense of any team that either one of us cheers for.
Yes, I absolutely agree. And I'll tell you what, though. I mean, from a geographical standpoint, right? Toronto, I know, is very close to Buffalo. So there's always been a rivalry there. So I would love to see that again. And then even from a Detroit.
The last time they played each other in the playoffs was 1988.
Ooh. Okay.
Right? 98, I believe. 99? Might have been 99. 99. Yes, it was 99. Because that was the year that the Sabres went to the finals. Because they played the Leafs in the conference finals. They beat the Leafs in 5 games. The Leafs couldn't score on Dominic Hasek.
Yeah, I was going to say, Hasek beat the Leafs.
And the Leafs were a surprise team. I mean, really, they made it there because of Cujo that year.
Cujo, oh, yeah. Oh, goodness. Days.
Yep, those were the days. Okay, should we move to this Eastern Conference playoff race? Because I think that's our final thing of the show. Let's start here. Who do you think is not going to make? Who's the first team you're going to knock off here? Because we'll just say there's the Pittsburgh Penguins, the New York Islanders, the Detroit Red Wings, and the Washington Capitals. We've got four teams vying for, and the Philadelphia Flyers, sorry. Five teams vying for two playoff spots. Who's the one team that you think, no, just forget about them, they're done?
Well, I think the easy one is Pittsburgh to me, but I'm also going to say the New York Islanders.
They have a huge game tonight.
Yeah.
It's Washington, Pittsburgh. I mean, by the time you're watching the show, you know the result, but I mean, that game is likely, if Pittsburgh loses, it's over for sure.
No, I agree. Yeah, definitely over for them. But for me, I mean, okay, I'm just going to come out and say it. I'm going to give you my prediction where I think everybody's going to fall. I ultimately think the Washington Capitals find a way to squeak in, but they're going to finish third in this division, right? In the Metro. Yeah, and Philly's going to fall out and miss the playoffs completely. John Tortorella is going to get fired. Ooh. Red Wings make the playoffs in that final wild card spot. Yeah. And here's another kicker, too. I'll just throw it out there, too. I think the Toronto Maple Leafs finish in the first wild card spot and the Lightning jump them. That last game of the season.
Oh, when the Leafs and the Lightning play in the last game of the year, you think they're going to be, that's going to be for the division?
Absolutely.
To be honest, I would take that. I would take that because that means that the Leafs are probably playing the Bruins. I think I would take the Bruins over the Panthers.
Oh, I absolutely, if I'm a Leafs fan, I would rather play the Bruins. I know the history isn't there, but I think.
I just beat the fucking Bruins.
I don't think the Bruins are going to go far regardless where they finish the season because I think their lack of depth down the middle is just going to hurt them. We'll see how that plays
out. But the Leafs tough. Although the Leafs did play really well against the Panthers on Monday night, but it was a Monday night. A random Monday night. They're like, oh, look, the Leafs look so much faster. It's a Monday night. It's just a random regular season Monday night. Who cares?
I don't care where they finish. I think everybody is going to be talking about the Panthers taking the East again, so... Doesn't matter where they place. And I don't think they care either, really.
Now, you think that it's more likely that the Tampa Bay Lightning, who have no games in hand on the Leafs, that in seven games, 14 points, that the Lightning are going to get, what, 12 points to the Leafs, 8? You think the Leafs are only going to get 8 points over the next 14 possible points?
Yeah, I do.
It's just a hell of a dip over a seven-game span. It's tough to pitch a team 4 points up.
So here's the thing. I think the Lightning have a lot more to play for right now going into the playoffs than I think the Maple Leafs do, right? The Maple Leafs, I think right now they're going to be looking to get guys some rest, right? I mean, they've got a couple hard games coming up at the end of the season when they've got to play Florida and Tampa, and I don't think they're going to be meaningful games to the Leafs. I think the Leafs are just going to want to rest some guys, keep some guys healthy.
What happened? See, now the Leafs have a game in hand on the Florida Panthers. And they play the Florida Panthers one more time, right?
They do. They absolutely do. But here's the thing, though. I don't think Toronto cares where they if they finish second or in the wild card. Because if I'm...
The road record's so good.
Yeah. If I'm Toronto, I just want to keep my guys healthy. I mean, they've been just... You've had Morgan Rielly just coming back. You've had injuries to Marner and guys being up and down the lineup. So for me, I'm just more concerned about keeping my guys healthy and ready to go because... Let's face it, regardless where you place, whether it's third or the wild card, you're still not starting at home. And I don't think they're going to catch Florida regardless because I think Florida is just going to go full steam ahead into the playoffs. So they're going to end up cruising to that second spot. And they're going to try to take that President's Trophy or at least make a run at it.
Yeah, 2-7-1 in their last 10. Things have not been going great in Florida. But I got to imagine they're just like, we're in. So
pretty much.
We don't need to kill ourselves. And that is a team that kills themselves to win.
Okay, yeah.
So you think the Washington Capitals, which, yes, they've got two games at hand on the Philadelphia Flyers. They win one of those games over them, and you know, they make the playoffs. It is crazy to think the three teams, after the two top teams in the Metro, all the next teams, or the next two teams, have minus 35 goal differential, minus 27. Pittsburgh has a plus one right now. And then the Devils have a minus 13, Blue Jackets minus 56. So really, three teams have a plus, and one of them's only a plus one. And it's probably likely that it's a minus by the end of the year because they seem to get blown out when they have bad games. But okay, so let's say Washington Capitals are in. You have the Philadelphia Flyers missing it, so they continue their slump. How about this other – so that's the – takes care of the bottom part of the Metro – where are we looking at the wild card? How do you see that shaking out?
Yeah, it's Toronto at the top spot, and then I think the Red Wings finishing that second wild card spot.
Okay. No Islanders.
No, I just, again, I go back to outside of Barzal and Horvat, there's no offensive depth there. And it's been showing, right? And right now, I hate to say it, but Sorokin has looked blah. Varlamov's been getting a majority of the starts lately. And so I just don't think this team is, I mean, Pat Roy's going to push them and they're going to make an effort. They're going to make an effort there, but I just don't think there's enough offensive firepower on this team to really, to get them over that hump, to get in.
Yeah. My brain, I was like, who is Pat Roy? Oh, Patrick Waugh.
Who's Pat Roy? Yeah, and I think Washington.
It's a coach that I don't know about named Pat yeah. Roy.
And when it comes to Washington, I mean, listen, they've got a lot of young guys that just want to get in and just, they're playing loose. They have nothing to lose right now. Washington would like to make the playoffs, but they don't care. I mean, I know they care, but really, if they miss it, it's not like it's the end of the world, right, for anybody on this team. It's not like anybody's playing for their jobs or anything big right now other than Ovi scoring goals.
In the salary cap era, how many teams have made the playoffs with a minus goal differential?
Ooh, that's a good question. That would be a very good trivia question, I think. I would probably go half a dozen at the most, I think.
I believe that it is what I think the Senators did the year they went to the Eastern Conference Final. But they were like a minus one. The worst, I think, was the Florida Panthers in maybe it was 2012. I think it might have been the lockout year. I think they were minus 24. So that's, I think I heard that. So the Florida Panthers at minus 24, I mean, this will be a record if the Washington Capitals make it, assuming that they continue their funny goal differential. They've only scored 203 goals. There is no playoff team right now that the next highest scoring team is the Flyers at 222. Oh, that's 20, basically 20 more goals than the next team. That's a pretty big difference over, I mean, even over the course of 80 games. I mean, that's a big difference there, but. Yeah, they do not score goals, but they are finding a way to do it. You think if they make the playoffs that their coaching staff should be up for Coach of the Year, that Spencer Carberry should be considered for it?
No, I don't think so. I mean, you could maybe put him in five or six or something like that in voting, but that's about the best I'm going to give him, I think.
I think just because they've been so bad. All those teams down there have been so bad that –
you don't get points for being good the second half of the season and everybody else being terrible. But for me, the thing that annoys me,
you don't get points for being just slightly not worse.
Right. What annoys me every year in and out is John Cooper's lack of accolades in this category because, man, he does such a fantastic job with that team. And I know he has so much talent.
But he hasn't been fired.
Yeah.
Because he never wins Coach of the Year. As soon as you do, you're out of there. That means, I have a theory behind that. My theory behind why coach of the year often get fired, because a lot of times it's a story of, oh, wow, this team was, it was unexpected that they do this well. And here they are. You could say that's because the next year they went and they said, oh, see, we are pretty good. And so they don't make a lot of changes. Turns out you weren't that good. And it was just your coach. That's one side of it. The other side is that coach literally spent the entire year milking those little udders all year long, and those things are raw as hell. Now you got to get somebody else in there to lotion up the udders, because it's just he can't be trusted anymore. there's my
bro.
Cow milking analogy.
Yeah, I'll give you that though. That is the problem, right? I mean, it consistently goes to somebody who takes a terrible team, gets them an extra 40 points in the standing somehow, and yes, you get Coach of the Year. I mean, look, it's probably going to happen in Vancouver with Rick Tocchet. No offense to him, but
I don't think Rick Tocchet's going to get fired if he gets.
No, I don't think so either. But again, yeah, that's what ended up happening. You never see guys like Peter Laviolette or, I mean, again, in New York. I mean, what they're doing out there, it's they look fantastic, but he's not going to get any.
You don't think he's going to get any love?
I think he might finish top three, maybe number four, but he's not going to.
But he also comes in and he takes over a team that was already good, and they've been conference finals a couple years ago. They had 107 points last year, and this year they're at 106. They'll probably finish around what, 112 114, so a little bit better of a year, of course, but it's not as if he took a non-playoff team and made them a playoff team. So I think that's often the reason why you want to give somebody that coach of the year is, hey, you came in and you took that team that wasn't a playoff team and you made them a playoff team. So that's impressive. If the Flyers manage to hold on here, I think that Tortorella should be considered for coach of the year. 100%.
Well, listen, it
had 75 points that went blatantly out of their way to tell everybody, we're rebuilding. We're going to be bad this year. And he was like, oh, I got something to say about that. Let's go.
He'll be able to
get his team under a gun all year long.
Yeah, he'll be the second guy.
The other night.
He'll be the second coach to win it for a third time. I mean, there's only been 8 guys that have won it 2 or more times. So,
yeah, that's why he gets fired all the time.
Yep.
He milks them. All right. I think that is our show. I guess I should give my predictions too.
Yeah, I want to hear them. Absolutely.
Yeah. I'm going to tell you what I want to happen. Forget what I think is going to happen because it's always wrong. I'll tell you what I want to happen. I don't care whether the Leafs finish third or first wild card. Where all those things are pretty much decided, at least as far as those teams are in the playoffs. I'm going to tell you who's going to make the playoffs. I think that the Red Wings are going to make the playoffs. And I think that the Pittsburgh Penguins are going to make the playoffs. The Penguins are going to beat the Washington Capitals. Now, this could be, you could be listening to this and be like, well, they didn't, bro. But Penguins beat the Capitals tonight. They find a way to go on a tear here at the end of the year. And it's kind of, it's a little karma here. Last year, they had just the weirdest, worst ending to their season. And I think this year, you go, they had no business making the playoffs this year, and they did. Whereas last year, they should have been in the playoffs. They should have been. And I think this year will make up for it. I think the Penguins make the playoffs. And I think the other teams just continue to free fall here. But I think that the Red Wings sneak in, maybe on the last day of the year. I'm going Pittsburgh, bottom team in the Metro. They'll take on the Hurricanes and get spanked. And the Red Wings sneak in there, second wild card, and they get to play the New York Rangers.
I'll tell you this, though. I'll tell you this. I wouldn't hate seeing Sidney Crosby in the playoffs. I think that would be phenomenal. Again, you've heard it all year long, I think, since the trade deadline. Is this it for Sidney? Is he going to eventually ask to move out? And I don't think that's going to happen, but there's something else to play for there.
Or what if the Washington Capitals get in the Metro in the third spot, the Penguins sneak into the wild card spot, and then the Washington Capitals beat the Hurricanes, the Penguins beat the Rangers, and we get a Capitals-Penguins second round.
That's a pipe dream. Yeah, okay.
That's how I'm dialing it up. That would be a fun one, too. Tonight is probably the most meaningful Capitals-Penguins game we've had since, what year did the Capitals win the Cup? It was 2017?
17. Yeah.
Yeah, probably the most meaningful game since those two teams played each other in the playoffs that year.
I can't wait.
I can't think of a more meaningful game than they've had. So it'll be a fun game tonight. Any final thoughts before we get out of here?
Boy, I'll tell you what, though. I can't wait to, again, this is going to shake up to be a fun playoff tree, no matter how it turns out in the East. But I can't wait till we start doing our predictions here.
Yep, absolutely. All right, next week will be our show. And the playoff picture will probably start to reveal itself a little more. We'll look forward to that. We'll finish up our funerals and we'll get to some playoff predictions once we know who is where they're going to be. There could be some by next week that we know, like, here's the matchup. So. All right, you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at OT Hockey Talk. To our listeners, thanks for listening to us, watching us. We are looking forward to the playoffs. Justin, have a great night. And we'll talk to you guys soon.